Coming up on KUCB News, the commercial fishing season has opened for golden king crab, and for the first time, an Alaska Native character is leading a nationally distributed children's TV show. Stay tuned.
Programming on KUCB is made possible by Redfish Electronics, now providing new, used, and refurbished computers, tablets, iPods, MP3s, phones, phone accessories, and flat screens. We also carry external hard drives for your digital storage needs. Redfish Electronics is located in the airport parking lot next to Northport Rentals. Redfish Electronics can be reached at 359-2205.
Good afternoon. You're listening to KUCB 89.7 FM on Alaska. I'm Laura Craigle with some local news on Wednesday, August 7th, 2019. Fishing quotas for Aleutian golden king crab are up again this year. East of Aka, commercial fishermen can harvest 4.3 million pounds. To the west, they can take almost 2.9 million. Those numbers represent 12 and 15% increases over last season, according to biologist Miranda Westfall of the Alaska Department of Fish and Game.
Things are looking good. We're seeing some recruitment coming in. We're seeing females with eggs. We're seeing that both stocks look like they're in fairly good shape right now.
This is the second golden crab season governed by the department's new stock assessment model. It estimates the stock sizes based on fishery data and observer samples rather than a preseason trawl survey like the region's other crab fisheries. Westfall says the model worked well last year, providing biologists with more flexibility to manage the unique stock, which was previously capped by a rigid quota.
I think, you know, the appropriate balance was in there is to maintain the stock at a sustainable level. We hit the harvest caps for both, which is a good situation.
Westfall says the fleet has also been happy to harvest more crab, especially when fishermen have endured a number of cut quotas and canceled seasons in the region in recent years. But she says the good news for goldens won't necessarily carry over for other species like tanner, apelio, or red king crab.
It's apples and oranges in this case. Golden king crab are distinct in their habitat. Most of our other crab fisheries occur in the Bering Sea. These are in the Aleutians, Western Aleutians. The habitats are very different and their life strategies are very different. We don't have any information on the rest of the crab stocks right now.
Surveys of those stocks are still being analyzed. The data will be released as fall and winter crabbing draws nearer. For now, five registered boats have until April 30th to fish for goldens, though they often reach their quotas before that regulatory closing date. Last season, the species sold statewide for $5.95 per pound on average. The Aleutian fishery in particular is worth roughly $30 million. Meanwhile, the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration is continuing to track the health of the Bering Sea's ecosystem. Scientists are just now starting their annual look at the northern Bering, and as KNOM's Davis Hovey reports, they're expecting to see warmer water fish in even larger concentrations than they did last season.
2010 has become a benchmark for some scientists studying the Bering Sea. They say the last few years have shown hardly any resemblance to what was considered an average season at the beginning of the decade. For example, when looking at water in some areas around St. Lawrence Island, from 2010 to 2017, the bottom temperature went up by 8 degrees Celsius.
That was water that before was near freezing on bottom. Now it's in the 40s. The crabs and whatnot, they went from needing an overcoat to wearing t-shirts.
That was Lyle Britt, the recently appointed supervisor for NOAA Fisheries Bering Sea Bottom Trawl Survey. He and his research team study the overall health of the Bering Sea ecosystem while assessing groundfish in the area. Within the last couple years, warming waters in the Bering Sea have eliminated the cold water pool, which Britt says used to be a pervasive feature. According to Britt, only 1% of the eastern Bering Sea shelf had a cold pool last year, but otherwise, it did not exist. Once the cold water barrier started breaking apart in 2017, Britt says large populations of Pacific cod and pollock, for unknown reasons, busted through into northern waters.
To the account of a 900% increase in the overall biomass of Pacific cod.
For walleye pollock, Britt says the biomass estimate was under 20,000 metric tons in 2010, but then jumped up to 1.3 million tons in 2017. Despite these sizable increases, there are a couple of species that appear to be decreasing in numbers throughout the northern Bering Sea. Britt says one of them, Arctic cod, tend to favor colder waters.
In 2018, that number dropped to 11 metric tons. That's one of the primary prey bases, as everyone knows, in this region, for everything from some of the seabirds to the marine mammals to even the larger fishes.
Britt and his NOAA fisheries team just completed a bottom trawl survey in the southern Bering Sea. Now they move on to the northern Bering and plan to be done in September. Reporting in Nome, I'm Davis Hovey.
The Interior Department signed a new land swap agreement for a King Cove road last month, days after giving up its appeal of a court ruling that said its prior agreement violated federal law. Alaska Public Media has obtained a copy of the new agreement, signed earlier by Interior Secretary David Bernhardt and the CEO of the King Cove Corporation. As with previous agreements, this one calls for the department to give land in the Eisenbeck National Wildlife Refuge to the Native Corporation in exchange for land of equal value. The intent is to allow the corporation to complete the final 12 miles of a road to Colt Bay. Much of the new agreement is identical to the last one. It calls for a basic unpaved road, but this time it does not say the road will be limited to non-commercial use. King Cove Corporation Chief Executive Della Trumbull says the reason the community wants the road has not changed.
It's basically safe transportation, safe access.
Planes often can't land in King Cove due to fog or high wind. Trumbull and leaders in the Aleutians East Borough say the road will save lives by connecting the community to Cold Bay and its all-weather airport. Counting back to 1980, the borough attributes 18 deaths to the lack of land access due to plane crashes or delayed medical treatment. Environmentalists, however, say a road would damage world-class wetlands and harm migrating birds and other wildlife. Attorney Bridget Passerianos represents conservation groups that are suing to stop the road. She says she's concerned the new agreement does not prohibit commercial use.
Yeah, we were pretty surprised to see that. That's a pretty significant change from the last version.
Interior Secretary Bernhardt has also signed a 20-page document setting out his reasons for approving the land swap. A judge blocked the 2018 exchange, arguing that former Secretary Ryan Zinke had not adequately explained his decision. Now airing on PBS stations across the country is the first nationally broadcast children's TV show featuring an Alaska Native League character. Molly of Denali premiered last month as a production of Boston Public TV station WGBH. As Alaska Public Media's Wesley Early reports, the show centers on a 10-year-old Athabascan girl named Molly Mabray and her fictional interior village of Kaya.
Hey everyone, it's me, Molly!
Molly!
Show co-creator Dorothea Gillum of WGBH knew from the get-go that she wanted to make a kid show about an outdoorsy girl who lived in a more rural setting. When brainstorming ideas, Alaska was all over the news.
So when we were thinking of a place to set the store, we thought Alaska, and very quickly realized that we needed to partner with Alaska Natives to tell the story right.
Those partnerships touch every part of the show's production. Molly of Denali features indigenous writers, cultural advisors, and voice actors. And that theme song you heard earlier?
From Cactovic down to Juneau, always wanting to learn more.
It's sung by two members of the Native music group Bamuwa. Member Philip Blanchette is originally from Bethel and he's of Yupik descent. He says every move made during the show's production had to get the okay from the Native advisors.
I've been able to see some of the storylines and some of the earlier versions of episodes, and if there was something that was a little bit questionable about, like, you know, the authenticity of like how it was done, it would be addressed.
Blanchette says that even extended to the theme song, which initially was written with a more generic indigenous sound instead of being specifically Athabascan, like Molly.
It was like Molly Denali, and then it had the breakdown. It was like, or it had something like that, and that's where we were immediately like, Athabascans don't say I mean, they can, but they won't. I mean, not they don't in their singing. You know, they have a different language, and it's a different way style of dancing.
That attention to authenticity extends throughout the village of Kaya, where Molly spends her days helping her parents run the Denali Trading Post, hanging out with her friends Tui and Trini, and running her blog, where she teaches viewers about living in Alaska. Molly also gets the opportunity to learn about her own native roots. An early episode shows Molly getting an Athabascan name from her great auntie.
Listen up, everyone. My grandniece Molly has a new native name, and it is Sha-nya. It means one who informs us.
The name holds significance because while a prominent theme of the show is Alaska Native culture, the educational aspect of the show deals with information gathering. Here's Gillum again.
She looks at diagrams and pictures and all sorts of ways to glean information that help her solve real life problems like how do you get a moose off of the runway so you can land, or how do you make bug spray when you forgot your bug spray at home?
While the show serves as a window into the life of a modern Indigenous family, including learning various Native words, it also includes broader stories about living in Alaska. This scene shows Molly and Trini interacting with wildlife in Trini's garden.
Shh! Dinjik moose! Stay away from my garden, moose! Got it?
As the show launches, parents can expect the theme song to stay in their head, while kids can latch onto Molly's catchphrase, the Gwich'in word for thank you.
Masicho! Let's go!
Molly!
In Anchorage, I'm Wesley Irving.
And a reminder, with Election Day less than 2 months away, Unalaskans can now file to run for local office. The candidacy period is open for 5 seats that'll be on the municipal ballot come October. The 3 city council spots are currently held by Roger Rowland, Dave Gregory, and Mayor Frank Kelty. The 2 school board posts belong to Kelty and Denise Rankin. All of the seats come with 3-year terms, and if you're interested in running for one of them, you must file at City Hall by August 19th. And that's the news from Unalaska. I'm Laura Craigle, and you're listening to KUCB 89.7 FM. Find us online at kucb.org, and please stay tuned for your local and marine weather forecasts.